Blog Talk Radio.
Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, Blog Talk Radio. And this evening is Tuesday, March the 30th, 2021. And tonight, once again, we are asking and stating the prisons, another perk for the corporations. America never admits the realities of America. Let's talk. Recently, there was an article in a progressive online news source that featured the Angola prison death camp, slave camp, and showed all the prisoners that worked there, over 25 corporations. And this is our... Work for 25 corporations. And so our news analysis always deals with an anatomy of oppression, which requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism. You can call it fascism, you can call it racism, but if you don't include the history of the anatomy of oppression and imperialism on this planet, you will not know the source of today's struggles against oppression for liberation. And before we turn the mic over to our dear comrade Ralph Pointer, we want to say another man went down. He had a long chain on, and we say, Brother Chip Presente, and we will be hearing more from that, Sister Ann has agreed to do a presentation on Chip Fitzgerald. So without further ado, once Brother Ralph gives us his introduction and the poem, Poet in Residence gives his presentation, we're going to open up with the discussion and information on Mamiya. But right now, Brother Ralph, your mic is open.
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. And I will begin with happy birthday, Sister Betty, 77. And I will tell the story at some point of how we met those many, many years ago. But as we say this evening, let's talk. Can we talk? And one of the things we have to remember when we talk, we must speak clearly. We must say what it is. And if you don't do that, you never come to any conclusion. Now, in the news we had talked about last week and the news this week. Last week is mass killings. This week is the opening of the trial of the soldier in the Army of Occupation who killed George Floyd. And I use these terms because I say we must speak clearly. Now, the opening, and I'm sure many of you listened to it, was a profile in terror. And we get it all the time. I don't know how people miss it when they continually say police officers. And I don't care whether there are police officers of color. I like to refer to what Lynn Stewart said. And she says, how many of those police officers of color go to trial and turn in these killer cops, these killers who have been terrorizing our community? And only when that happens do you have anyone opposing this Army of Occupation. And then I say, how did you miss that? Eric Gardner over a single cigarette, George Floyd, I don't know what pretense, but we don't have to look at those two. We have to look at the number of people of color killed by the Army of Occupation year after year. And then we compare it with a young man who should kill 10 people. One of them was a police officer. They handcuffed him. That's police work. The young man who killed 6 in Atlanta, Georgia, they handcuffed him. That's police work. That's different than terrorizing a community. Our community is terrorized, and anybody who watched that introduction to the trial today with the woman explaining there were people there and he was begging for his life. He called for his mother. And I say to every adult, what would you have done had you been there? Would it have been a peaceful killing by the Army of Occupation? Do you note the difference? How can I say it so that you see the difference in a police organization and an organization of occupation? And when you talk about organizations of occupation, I have to give the Vietnamese people credit when I say there is no longer an excuse for the existence of anybody's oppression. It's not about it's not about weapons. It's not about numbers. It's not about anything other than the determination to be free at any cost. And when I say any cost, this America wanted to poison the very land that we live on, to destroy it, to never be useful again, to destroy, and for those religious people, God's earth, to imprison, to oppose, to deny these people in Vietnam life. And I'll get off that because I do get emotional. But they taught us how to act. Freedom at any cost. End of oppression at any cost. By any foe. And if that doesn't educate, we look at the drug laws as applied to folks of color. Now, you know what that is. That created the drug, the prison industrial complex. Then we get opioid laws. That's the laws for white folk. And so we say we take them to treatment. Is there anybody who does not understand that? And we opened up the program and said, the prisons are another perk to corporations. More slavery, cheap labor. As Lynn Stewart said it, America is hooked like a junkie on his drugs. They're hooked on cheap labor, and we are it. Political thought. And we have to understand, what is our political thought? We are like, as my father used to say, the caboose on the train. And I go further and say, there are two cabooses on the train. And if any of you who have been around for a long time, you remember when trains, long trains, had two cabooses, so much work to be done. And the front caboose is composed of those people who have never been able to get a start in this economic endeavor in America through lack of education, through miseducation, and they keep those people in the front caboose in line with the brief terms nigger nigger. And in the rear caboose, we have people of color, and they haven't been able to get out of that caboose because we haven't developed the thought of an engine, a separate engine to pull that caboose. And so we also have in that caboose those people who say, go slow, not now, no demands. We give our political support without demands. And so we are caught in this outrageous situation where we don't have correct political thought. Our political prisoners are dying in the death camps. And we don't even have a demand to free those people who did nothing other than stand for justice. That's all they did. They said, we do not want to be oppressed. We will not submit to an army of occupation. And some, and I won't use the terms that I'm thinking, says, oh, but they used a gun. Well, you damn better straight use a gun when the oppressor uses guns. There is a difference. Violence is when somebody oppresses. Liberation is when you get away from oppression. Two different acts. One noble and one ignoble. I've been told that I have used too much time this evening, but I say we must speak truth. We must not be afraid of reality. What greater reality is there than the opening of the George Floyd case? People standing and watching. And I say to you, what would you have done? as my father said to me many, many years ago. And then, what did you do? And I've learned to do. And I tell you straight up, it wouldn't have happened if I was there. It would have been bigger. Maybe more people would have been killed. But it wouldn't have been a turkey shoot, a destructive, terrorizing, to terrorize the community and the community standing around watching. That's how you know this community, our community, is terrorized. We watch while our brothers and sisters are killed, and when those who resist are in prison, we have difficulty raising a voice to save them. Do I need to speak any more about our being a terrorized community, America employing an army of occupation in all of our communities, and it goes so deep, and I do not have the time this evening to speak further on it, but I'm annoyed. And as Queen Mother Moore said, how can you be annoyed at the people who are oppressed? And I said, because we have an example. We have our brothers and sisters of the 60s, our brothers and sisters of the 30s, our brothers and sisters who fought for our oppression. We have Vietnam, Cuba, China. We have the world. And we keep ignoring that reality. But I'm going to sit back and listen to the wisdom of our poet, who gives us wisdom and entertainment over and over again. I listen to it. I turn on the program sometimes and just listen to Professor Louis and turn it off. Professor Louis, what words of wisdom do you have for us this evening? Your mic is open.
New York City. It isn't very pretty. You'll be looking, booking. You will be hooking for a little bitty pity in the nitty-gritty that is New York City, where the people sleep three deep in the doorways and the hallways. They'll be sleeping in the alleyways in the windy, rainy, freezing days in New York City, where the rent is never heaven sent, where your last dollar is always spent, where the money you need is never lent. We were not meant to get our minds bent with rent high as the sky makes a grown man and woman cry as they try to stay alive for the family to survive. You connive, jive, sweat, bet, and get money to pay. Day after day, you pay to the bloodsuckers, mother truckers, bad luckers, money-sucking landlords, blood-sucking real estates early and late, from here to the pearly gates in New York City, where your neighborhood has plenty of good empty buildings, bricked up, tricked up so homeless people will not get hot and commit the crime every time of peeking in there, sneaking in there, leaking in there, and sleeping in there for free in New York City, where anything you try to buy is double, triple, quadruple high, but the price of poison, that is crack, also smack, check it, Jack, the price of pain remains the same, cheap and always available in New York City, where a 12-year-old kid, you know he did, can always find every time the pusher man, but somehow the policeman can never find him, never pays him, no, never mind, in New York City, where you could lose your life or your wife for one slip on a trip to the corner for a container of milk in New York City, where you run from the sound of a gun. It's no fun city when the bullet meant to be sent to be someone else does not stop till you drop, else at your four-year-old kid. It was nothing he did, play in front of the house, quiet as a mouse. The louse who pulled the trigger didn't figure on killing your son, but that's what he done with his dumb gun in New York City, where poor and working people kill each other. Sisters and brothers, we kill each other while newspapers, TV, rich people laugh at our epitaph. Another statistic on the ground. Craft in New York City, where the traffic never stops, the people never stop, the cars never stop, not even for the stop lights. Forget about the stop signs in New York City, where in restaurant kitchens, garment sweatshops, where you work till you drop from sun to sun, the work is done, you understand, by black, brown, and yellow hands, but the money jumps like a bunny to white hands that command from Manhattan or Westchester, hands that command out of sight. But as it goes, mostly quite white as the snows, where in New York City, where blocks and blocks around have buildings falling down to the ground, slums built by bums, buildings that are mixed up but never fixed up, buildings filled with poor and working people with dark skins paying unbelievable money to rich and non-working owners with light skins who stay far away. They never get to set foot on the block. They couldn't stand the shock, but it's kind of funny. They take time to collect the money in New York City, where you bet you can get what you need when you read ads in the paper for a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a new trend, ads for any form of sexual activity, ACDC, whatever your proclivity, S&M captivity, men, women, gay, straight, a hot date or a husband or wife to love you the rest of your life in New York City, where the money is made, where the dues are paid in the shade, with a razor blade, where you can always get laid and you prayed you don't get AIDS in New York City, where the heat from the street comes up through your feet and the people you meet greet you, beat you, cheat you, delete you, compete with you, and out-elite you as you strive to survive, try to thrive, jive just to stay alive like bees in a hive in New York City, where every day there is a miracle, a lyrical, empirical miracle to tickle your mind, not a nickel or a dime, but fine every time, a miracle we survive. Somehow, right now, we survive the rush hour on the number 5. Somehow, right now, we still talk to each other, sometimes walk like sister and brother. Somehow, right now, we survive the poison air, and we are still here and there and everywhere. Somehow, right now, we find the joke to cut through the smoke, that flash through the trash, the rap that cuts the crap. Somehow, right now, we get the need to rise above the greed of the people in power, the downpressers of the hour, rise above the bankers, landlords, and crooks, the two faces and the dirty looks, the discriminations, manipulations, and falsifications of the corporations who will sell your nations every time for a dollar or a dime. It's the ones with the money who keep you down, honey, in New York City, where we have the need to rise above the greed, not just for you and me, but one day for the children to be free in New York City, where those who come last shall later come first. They say the poor people shall inherit the earth, and if we make it here, we'll make it anywhere, when the real feel of the real deal will slowly turn and rise to the top. You could buy a lie, mama, but the truth will pop. We are what we are. We're not what we got, and our day will come through the cold and the hot, and we're all in this together, if you like it or not, in the nitty-nitty, gritty-gritty, gritty-nitty, nitty-gritty, that is New York City.
Thank you, Professor Louis. Professor Louis is our miracle every week. It is surely a miracle that we are still here, still doing, still trying. Thanks again, Professor Louie. Sister Betty.
I just want to remind everyone that the People's United Front is having a Zoom webinar to deal with the issue of creeping fascism and forever with us racism on April the 3rd, starting at 9 a.m. And many of the people that you hear this evening will hopefully be joining us. One of them will be our poet in residence, Professor Louis. So if you want to hear more on April the 3rd, tune in. You can Google People's United Front and the links should come up, or you can send us a text message or an email and we will send you the Zoom link. Without further ado, I'm going to open up the mics for the special family that is in the house tonight. We have many people who have for the years, many, many years, been struggling to free our warriors, to free our comrades in captivity. And they're here tonight to address the issue of the government's attempt murdering Mamiya. And we say, if you want him to get well, bring him home. So I'm opening up the mic of Sister Pam Africa, Sister Suzanne Ross, Comrade Gil Obler, and anyone else that I can see is with the Mamiya Coalition. If you'll just bear with me a moment while I round up the usual suspects, as they say. And I want to welcome them, and I want to thank them for getting on the call with us tonight, because it is so important. I'm looking for Suzanne's number right now. I think she's using a different number than herself. Okay. Pam, I think your mic is open. Gil, I think your mic is open. Is that correct? And I know Ann Lamb is open. Okay. So whoever wants to jump in there, Pam, I know you have a heavy plate. You might want to start. And let's find Suzanne as well. You can reinforce each other. Okay, Pam, is your mic open? All right, Gil, you can start, and we'll go to Pam.
Okay, yeah, Pam's going to talk about the situation, but I'm just here to talk about April 10th and April 24th. April 24th is Mamiya's birthday. We're having a big rally in Philadelphia. Pam will talk about that some more. So I'm just here to let the New York folks know that we're going to have vehicles, a bus, a van, cars, whatever it takes to get people down to Philadelphia. We can also assist with other means of transportation. The way to get a hold of us is either to call me at 617-388-5445, or you can email bus@freemumia.com. And you can also go to the freemumia.com website. In about 2 days, we'll have all the information about how to join us. Going down to Philadelphia on April 24th. We're going to be leaving from New York, probably near Union Square, the north end of Union Square, at 10 a.m. on Saturday, April 24th. We're also having an open-air rally 2 weeks before that, Saturday, April 10th. At the same place, the north end of Union Square Park. And that's going to be from noon until 2 p.m. And that'll be a place where you can get bus tickets from us. You'll also hear about Mumia's medical situation, about his legal situation. And we hope to have some other surprise guests with information about the situation, not just for Mumia, but all the political prisoners who have COVID. Mumia is also facing congestive heart failure. So it's a very serious situation, but there's also good news on the legal front. We have a case going with the Pennsylvania Superior Court, and you can hear about that and the status of that, but we need to get Mumia out because they're just stalling so that he'll die in prison.
Yeah.
Again, freemumia.com, freemumia.com is the website. And the email is bus@freemumia.com. And again, the phone number is 617-388-5445. But if you don't remember any of that, just go to the website, and by Thursday, there should be all the information about April 10th and April 24th.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. I think Pam and Suzanne, are you in the house? Did I open up your mics?
Yes, please. Did you?
Yes,
I
did.
I hear both of them. Yes, it is. We hear you.
Good.
All right, Pam, give us the lowdown on what we're going to do, what we need to do. Pam Africa.
Give us our marching orders.
Right. Well, get on the bus. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Look, the first thing I want to say is happy birthday to Betty. And, I really want to recognize the fact that you know, be one of the millions of people who recognize the fact that this is one of the strongest black educators, and I come to her house and, you know, she educates us about, you know, a lot of things, but that was my main reasoning, you know, getting on tonight. But the marching orders, happy birthday, Betty.
Happy birthday.
Right, yes. And Razakind is on his phone online trying to get through, too. And but yeah, it's very, very important that we keep pressure. And April 24th is a day that we always celebrate on behalf of Mumia. And but this is a day, this April 24th, and because Mumia was, again, in a near-death situation. And we're battling with a DA who is a progressive DA who knows to do the right thing but refused to do the right thing. And, you know, doing the work. Now, I know that he just cannot say, you know, I'm going to let Mumia go. I'm saying all the evidence is there. He know it. And he just needs to speak out. Stop telling the lie that Mumia is guilty. There's no evidence, you know. So, like I said, we're putting pressure on, you know, on people, and I'm quite sure Suzanne have a lot to say. And, oh, yesterday, I talked with Mumia yesterday, and what he said was, well, I can hear him. His breathing still isn't good. And he was saying that's like the after effects of, you know, of having the COVID and the congested heart failure. They say he no longer have it. I don't know, because Mumia have not been able to see his outside doctor. He has not been able to see. He's still in isolation, which is general population. No, it's COVID isolation. Everybody who go out, so he has to go out for another test. So he's back in isolation, and he don't have access to his tablet so that he would be able to see his doctor and have like a Zoom consultation, you know, with his doctor. So we really, you know, pushing for that. Mumia is not well. And he no longer, they say he no longer have COVID. They say he no longer has a congested heart failure. And but Mumia, like all the other political prisoners, they really, really need our, you know, attention like never before. I'm going to jump off so that Dr. Suzanne Ross can get on here. Happy birthday, Betty. And I can't wait to get back up there.
All right. Thank you. But I want to say we finally opened up Brother Razakhan's mic as well. Brother Ralph, you wanted to say something.
Yeah. Brother Razakhan, give us your thoughts on the only solution for Mumia. Bring him home. You tell me what
you're... No question about that. I said no question about that. I just wanted to say happy Earth Day to the Sister Warren, and I know we're going to have a whole lot more of them. Well, you got everybody that you need on there for the Mumia situation. Yes, we'll be waiting on y'all when you come in.
Fantastic. We'll be there, and we look forward to you coming here. Join us. Allow us to join you. Suzanne, Dr. Ross.
Hey. I want to join in wishing Sister Betty the best happy birthday. The most deserved happy birthday. A great celebration.
Say if we,
it's not just
me alone.
We all celebrate you. We all celebrate you. And it makes me smile. It makes me smile. I'm smiling as I'm speaking because I love what you represent and the kind of person you've been and have and continue to be and what you mean to our movement. So thank you. Happy. So I will say a little bit about Mumia and this moment in history. So Mumia, you know, really represents two sides of the same coin. On the one hand is the deadly racist colonial system that wants to kill him and has tried again and again and again to kill him. I mean, we're on round four, round five, round six of the attempts to kill him, all the way from when he was arrested to the two times when they tried to legally execute him, to the time when he had hep C and nearly died from that, and to the current situation where he's been so sick and where we've had to see those depressing painful pictures that show how much he's suffering. And, you know, in the middle of all this, he sends us all a message of love and appreciation that is so uplifting, that this brother is something. So the other side of the coin is what he represents to people of the world. I mean, Mumia, I get, because I've done a lot of international work over the years, I get hundreds and hundreds of letters from around the world, from Burundi, from Brazil, from South Africa, from Algeria, from Senegal. And the notes and the letters that people send are so moving. There's one black brother who's been communicating with me from Brazil who is so eager to speak to Mumia and to his family. So the when I say two sides of the coin, we see the spirit of the people, the love of the people, Mumia's love, the best aspects of our movement are embodied in Mumia. And on the other hand, the most evil aspects of this government and all the different sides of the ruling class are also there. And for those who haven't followed the Krasner story, the DA Krasner, it is really pathetic and painful to see someone who has espoused himself, who has presented himself as progressive, being such a sellout. And, you know, he should not be allowed to live with that. This man has to admit that he was wrong. He has to admit that he was wrong in saying that all the evidence convinces him that Mumia is guilty. This MF cannot be in that kind of condition of lying. So I want to say a word about, so April 24th is partly about confronting him and the other politicians in Philadelphia. And I know in the midst of COVID that people are very nervous about traveling and being in large crowds. So number one, we're going to be outside, and that's always a much, much less dangerous situation. Number two, a lot more people are vaccinated, and hopefully that prevents, you know, the spreading of the disease. Number three, the methods of transportation are going to take into account, and please listen to that, bus, if it's a bus, which doesn't seem likely at this point, I hope it's a bus, but if there's no bus, cars will not be packed with people. I know I have two cars I'm working with. We're not going to have more than four people in them. People are going to wear masks. You know, it's that we're definitely not ignoring COVID. This is not a reckless action to support Mumia and support political prisoners in general. It's going to be carefully monitored and carefully controlled to not contribute to the spreading of the disease. So please, you know, anybody who's nervous about that, ask whatever questions you have. You know, on April 10th, there'll be a chance not only to buy tickets, but to ask questions, to get educated. That's a building action. I'm so glad we're going to have that action. We haven't had that in New York for a long time. So that building action is very important. But the importance of April 24th, it's great to call for those who can make all those phone calls to the politicians. You know, that's great. And people can call the website of letmumiaout.com, has all the numbers. Again, letmumiaout.com makes it very, very simple to contact the politicians. But there's something absolutely essential about us being visible in large numbers on April 24th in Philadelphia. Philadelphia politicians, Philadelphia ruling forces must know that they cannot get away with this. Once again, we have to show that we will not allow Mumia to be killed. He represents, not only do we love him as an individual, as a revolutionary, but he represents so much, not only in this country, as I said, but all over the world. We cannot allow him to be killed. And so being in Philadelphia, the 24th of April, is critically a critical, critical priority for all of us at this moment. Please, bring your family, bring your, my whole family is coming, you know, including my grandchildren. You know, everybody understands this is a very, very special moment. We must do everything we can to get as many people down in Philadelphia and show the people in the ruling forces in Philadelphia that they cannot get away with this. Please do everything you can to get down to Philadelphia on April 24th. Gil gave you the information. FreeMumia.com will have all this information in a few days. April 10th, it's a building action at Union Square. He gave you the phone number to call. Whatever you need, we will help you in any way possible because we want everyone there. So thank you once again, as usual.
We must be able to realize the love we feel for Mumia, the love we have for justice, into a political fist that will defy those people in charge of government.
In addition to Suzanne and Sister Pam and Brother Razakon, we have Brother Henry Higgins and we have Brother Ozzy Torre, New York City Jericho. Comrade, also open. Henry, we'll start with you. And thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure and an honor. I just want to emphasize what both Pam and Suzanne have indicated, that this is an all-out effort to secure compassionate release from Mumia. This is the final push that we have because they're out to kill him. And it's important for all people to also sign Pam Africa's message to the movement with Color of Change petition to D.A. Krasner.
Right.
Entitled to Stop Defending Mumia Abu-Jamal's Unjust Conviction. And he needs to know that, you know, we're not going for this nonsense. You know, he's participating in the murder of an innocent man, and that's unacceptable. And so we're asking all people to come out. Also to Wednesday, Betsy Payette is having a conference call for people to plan for the April 24th meeting. And so if you have the information that was presented a few minutes ago, please follow up. That's tomorrow afternoon about 7 o'clock. I'm not exactly sure of the time, but check the websites and the sources of information because it's a very important meeting for tomorrow. And we must do all that we can to free Mumia. And this man has suffered enough, and it just shows you the cowardice of this government and this society to railroad an innocent man because he tells the truth. So please come out and support Mumia, especially on April 24th. Thank you.
That's the process of terrorizism. Terrorize the people. You can arrest somebody without charges or to make charges that are unrealistic, but to stop the movement for freedom, we must not allow it. Sister Betty.
I want to now say Jericho is in the house from Boston. Go ahead, Brother Kazi.
Happy birthday. Can you hear me?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Betty. Happy birthday. And, you know, we're just in Boston. We're just getting ready to gear it up to come down on the 24th. And Jaleel's next class. And we want to say, you know, our condolences to Chip Fitzgerald, man. We can't have any more deaths, any more of our political prisoners dying in prison, man. We got to get them out.
Yep.
You know, free them all. And I'll see y'all on a move.
Thank you.
Thank you so
much,
Kazi. It's so good to have you in the house because this is a horrible, horrible moment. We feel so angry that we could not rescue Chip. Further ado, Sister Ann Lamb is going to take it up from here as we say, Brother Chip Fitzgerald, presente. Sister Ann, your mic is open.
Okay, I agree. This whole thing with Chip has me so enraged. I won't even say what I feel like doing about it. You know, Chip was like Jaleel. He's been in prison since he was 19 years old. He was about to have a birthday on April 11th. He was in prison for 52 years. 52 years. He was eligible for parole since 1976 and has been consistently denied over and over and over again by the parole board in California. Also, several years ago, he had a stroke, and he already was an elder. He was in a wheelchair for a while. He was always walking with a cane. So he was already in a prison where he shouldn't have been. You know, the California corrections people couldn't even put him in an appropriate, you know, prison for elders who, you know, have medical conditions. And he was deliberately set up by a cellmate to beat him up and stuff after he had that stroke. On March 17th, he had another major stroke. He was in an outside hospital for a while. People at that point didn't think he was going to make it. But he seemed to be, you know, responding to treatment from people who saw him. They said he moved his foot. He tried to reach out for somebody's hand. He opened his eyes. So we were hopeful that maybe he could pull through. And I know that his support committee has got to be just devastated. They were working so, so hard for him. So I have a little thing here from Baba Zaid. People know Brother Zaid. He works with the Malcolm X Commemoration Committee and also the People's Organization for Progress. He's also a Panther Cub. So he just wrote this short piece. This just in, Panther political prisoner Chip Fitzgerald has just left us for the land of the ancestors. He actually died just yesterday. In prison since 1969, he was one of the longest held political prisoners in the United States, 52 years. 52 years. Among the Panther political prisoners we have lost in captivity are Kwesi Balogun, Teddy Jahid, Albert Noah Washington, Bashir Hamid, and most recently Abdul Majid. No more. Let us bury this sinister white lie which says there are no political prisoners in the United States. Raise hell and bring our freedom fighters home. Long live Chip Fitzgerald. What's the call? Free them all. And that was from Baba Zaid. But I was up on the website for Chip, which people could still go there to learn a lot about Chip. It's called freedomfortchip.org. That's the number four, freedomfortchip.org. Lovely history there. And I found this beautiful piece he had written because he was hoping to really get out of there at his upcoming parole hearing. And he wrote this piece. It's like a prose poem called Upon My Release. And it says, upon my release, I will welcome the warmth and laughter of my grandchildren. I look forward to their hugs and smiles. I will be the grandpa present to soothe them through occasional scrapes after they show me their somersaults and expert bike riding maneuvers. I will have the chance to witness numerous bird species and listen to their songs. I'll hope for a rain to nourish the vegetables and flowers I planted days before, just as my mother used to do, and reach for the rainbow stretching across the sky after the rain. I will feel the mist on my face and rejoice. I will experience the waves of the ocean reflecting the moon-filled sky and the cozy breeze and graceful winds upon my skin. I will be outside in nature's healing environment as it soothes and comforts my body, allowing my age-filled bones to heal and rejuvenate in ways lost for most of my life. At the end of the evening, I will look forward to a soft bed and sinking my head into fluffy pillows as I curl up in soft covers and dream sweet dreams, knowing I will awake to a new day of freedom. I will have my eyes dazzled by the spectrum of radiant colors that only a city can sparkle. I look forward to enjoying the sights from a car window, recognizing the aroma of the city's possessions all converging together. I hope to share love and laughter, the joys and hardships of life with a special woman. We will lift each other's hearts as equals to face a brighter tomorrow. I will continue to appreciate the love and challenges of family. I imagine our dialogue will include our sense of community, our country, the world, our contributions and help to our neighborhoods, and, of course, sharing my personal sorrows and hope. I will lead by example with spontaneous acts of love, compassion, and kindness, thereby demonstrating my belief in the transformation of others. I will enjoy volunteering in preschools and visiting the elderly in convalescent hospitals. I will always give special devotion to finding peace and moving full speed to overcome the damaging impact associated with the daily screams of terror and absence of dignity that have engulfed my prison environment. Most of all, I will be dedicated to the journey and opportunity of spending my remaining life giving, giving of myself to achieve the many treasures of what it means to be a valued human being, embracing freedom. Chip Fitzgerald.
Well, they could take his life, but they couldn't take his humanity. We must have the poem up on Jericho website as
absolutely.
Chip Fitzgerald, my God.
It's like what Hampton said, you know, you can kill the revolutionary, but you can't kill the revolution.
Right on.
That hasn't changed. Now, we do have some other news, some actually positive news. First, I'll get some more negative news. COVID in prisons, 390,951 at least people residing in prisons have contracted this horrible disease. And of those many people, there have been at least 2,502 deaths. That's 2,502 people who received the death by incarceration penalty. So that is really horrible news. And then on another front, we also have in Pennsylvania our dear brother Russell Maroon Schultz, and he is also in dire straits, and he also needs to be released as soon as possible, in addition to having stage 4 colorectal cancer and having survived a really horrible bout of COVID. The man has lost 20 pounds. Now, I don't know how many people know Russell Maroon Schultz. He's a small person to begin with. So imagine him losing 20 pounds is really very dire. And I know Pam Africa said earlier the prison is saying that Mumia no longer has congestive heart failure. They can't say that. Congestive heart failure is not a temporary condition. Safia Bukhari died of congestive heart failure. Robert Cervais almost died of congestive heart failure in prison and ended up with a pacemaker. It's not just like some transient thing, like a cold. You know, what is this nonsense that they're saying? You know, it's really disgusting. So we have, you know, in addition to Mumia, we have Maroon in really dire straits. Chip was, of course, in dire straits. Matulu is in dire straits. You know, Kamal Siddiqui is in dire straits. So we really have to really fight and you know, push this forward to get everybody home. Because I do not want any more of my comrades to die inside those horrible, horrible death camps. There have been more than enough people dying. Now, on the good front, speaking of COVID, a judge in the Bronx just yesterday ordered the state of New York to immediately begin vaccinating all of their prisoners. Hey, hey. So, and this was thanks to some prisoners who bought a lawsuit. They bought an Article 78 lawsuit, and they won. So the judge is a woman. We like this judge. Her name is Allison Y. Tewitt, right? And she has said that this has been granted. It is further ordered that petition is ordered to show cause for a preliminary injunction pursuant to CPLR Section 6301, mandating that respondents immediately modify, respondents being the state of New York, immediately modify current COVID-19 vaccine eligibility category 1B to authorized incarcerated individuals for vaccination is granted. And it is further ordered that respondents' cross motion to dismiss the petition, of course they were trying that, right, is denied. This constitutes the decision and order of this court. So I was very happy to get that news. I said, all right, that's fantastic news. And another good news that we have is that the persecuting attorney up there in Rochester has dropped all the charges against Jalil in that voting rights nonsense, you know. So those are two positive things to look at today. And as soon as we have more news about Chip as to, like, when is the funeral going to be and memorial services and all that, we will definitely let people know. But I would encourage people to go to that freedomforchip.org. This is a serious, serious group of people who have been working with Chip for many, many years. They're very dedicated to him, and they put a lot of work into this beautiful website. Even have pictures of Chip when he was just a kid, 19. And, you know, it's really amazing, and there's a lot of information about Chip on there. He was the longest held of all the Black Panthers. He was down since 1969. He had a very good chance of walking out at the next board. He should have been out a long time ago. You know, they just kept denying him over and over for the usual revenge thing that they have. And I did go to the letmumiaout.com. It's very nice the way it's laid out, where you can easily do everything. So I will add that link to my webpage as well. And everybody,
all of these techniques, all of these retributions are about terror. They're saying, do not resist. And we must show them what resistance is all about. We must emulate courageous Vietnamese.
You're absolutely right. That's their message to everybody else on the planet. You know, it's like, if you resist the system, this is what will happen to you. So that's a very serious, you know, threat to people. And people do feel intimidated by that. But I say, hey, if we're not resisting this system, then we're complicit with it. At some level, if you're not out here resisting the system, you have eaten whatever, you know, you have drunk the Kool-Aid. You know, we can't be doing that. You know, we got too many important things that are happening because our political prisoners represent us. Any one of us could be in there tomorrow, you know. And I say, go ahead, state, terrorists, whatever the hell you want to call yourselves, bring it on. We'll be ready for you. We're going to fight back. We're not going to put up with this crap. You are not going to push us all into these dead camps. We refuse to go. And we were going to fight. I mean, you know, what's the worst thing they can do to you? Somebody asked me that a long time ago. I said, well, the worst thing they can do to me is kill me. So what the hell? At least I'll have died for a good cause.
Well, Ann, we have a long list. I have to move on. And
yeah, I know.
Thank you for that presentation. Pam, if you're still on, did you want to give any closing words?
Oh, I forgot to wish you a happy birthday, Sister Betty. Happy birthday.
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah, am I still on?
Yes.
Yes,
hello?
You are. Your mic has been open all along. Go ahead.
Right. You know, the presentation that Ann just did on our brother Chip and all was one that, you know, just blew me away. In fact, I got to confess, I was asleep at 9 o'clock. Razakon woke me up. I'm running around trying to get the phone, hit my knee smack dab on this pointed table. So when I was on there, I was holding that knee, but I was determined to get on here and, you know, continue to urge people. And I'm so glad that I stayed on and I was here, Sister Ann and Brother Louie, you the most.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ralph. Thank you, Betty.
Okay, sweetheart, we know you've got a heavy plate. You and Suzanne, so we understand if you can't stay on for the rest of the program. We more than understand that, and we really appreciate you for taking time from your schedule. I know you're doing it 24/7. I know your health has not been that great, so we really appreciate you for making this extra effort.
Yes,
thank you. On the move.
All right.
See y'all soon.
On the move.
Oh, I'm saying I want to hang.
Go ahead, Pam.
Oh, I'm living in Africa.
Oh, I see. I'm staying. I'm continuing to listen to the show.
Okay. Thank you.
Unless you need this line.
No. Anytime you want to chime in, we're going to keep your mic open. Anytime you want to chime in, you can. Brother Mark, your mic is open. I see Tom, Sister Dolores, and Joel in the queue. And a longtime visitor, Gwen, and Sister Vivian. So we've got a full house. Go ahead, Brother Mark.
Yeah, thank you, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph. Happy birthday to you, Sister. And thank you for your leadership. And Ralph was on a live show last night. The format is a little different, but he was great as usual. Very inspiring. And we're definitely going to be doing the virtual conference this Saturday, but we're really pushing, you know, thanks to the leadership you and Brother Ralph are providing for April 10th in New York City, April 24th in Philly, and then May Day. We're going to have national actions across the country on May Day. And it's really important, regardless of what struggles we're in, whether it's in the public schools, whether it's in the neighborhoods, whether it's at the workplaces, that we always include the issue of political prisoners, you know, because we just had that show last night, and there were a lot of people who normally see our ad who didn't even know that we had political prisoners in the United States. You know, amongst us, you know, organizers and activists, we know what's going on, But there's still too many people who, you know, when the U.S. denounces China and, you know, and Asian people about human rights or Cuba about human rights, they don't understand that the worst violator of human rights is the United States. And so I think just like we're gonna include on Saturday in our virtual conference, we're gonna bring this issue up, and we're gonna support wholeheartedly the April 10th and the April 24th event going into May Day. You know, this is important that we make these connections for people all the time, because we're up against an enemy that controls millions and billions of dollars in media advertising and controls the institutions in the society. So everything we can do to free Mumia and to free all political prisoners, we absolutely have to do that. And I want to thank you for allowing me to speak tonight. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much for that.
And before we go to Brother Tom, we want to open up the mic of Brother Saddam from Boston. Your mic is open.
Peace, Mama Betty and Brother Ralph. I just want to say Happy Earth Day, Mama Betty, first and foremost. And that Kazi and I and the rest of the crew will be out there in Philly in support of Mumia and the rest of political prisoners. Free them all.
Free them all.
Thank you so much for that, Sister Betty.
We want to acknowledge that there are full house tonight, and so we're going to get the ball rolling with our cast of usual characters. Brother Tom Syracuse, your mic is open.
Thank you, Betty. Very happy birthday to you, and may you have many more.
Yeah.
So that you can continue your good work. I'd like to talk about the mass media and efforts by the ruling class to pit people against each other. The government's $2 trillion economic stimulus will largely go to Wall Street to keep the stock market at an all-time high, but it is not working. Those who have lost their jobs, had their homes foreclosed, or cannot pay the rent, have reached the levels of the Great Depression of the 1930s. Most Americans cannot afford to buy the stuff big corporations produce. The majority of Americans know there is something seriously wrong with the system. The Wall Street ruling capitalists cannot allow Americans start connecting the dots and realize that it is capitalism and Wall Street capitalists that benefit from the system, and that these Wall Street capitalists are the cause of the economic crisis. That is why the ruling class, aided by the mass media that serves the ruling class, especially uses TV, which reaches almost everyone's home, and uses this media to pit people against each other, white versus straight versus gay, men versus women, those born in the U.S. versus recent immigrants, those from Mexico and Central America. And now the media is featuring anti-Semitic and anti-Chinese incidents. I find it hard to believe that these so-called new incidents have not been happening ever since Jews and Chinese first immigrated to this country. The working class itself has been divided between the white working class and those from communities of color. Incredibly, some socialists have fallen into this thinking by looking at the white working class as almost an enemy. white working class jobs have been outsourced overseas, and while many are infected with racism and male chauvinism, I believe that most of them are angry because of their economic situation. The white working class had been abandoned by the Democratic Party of FDR's New Deal, and therefore manipulated by Trump and the Republican Party. So-called identity politics, rather than a class analysis, is supported by some progressive groups. The leadership of Black Lives Matter has partnered with the Working Families Party, which is controlled by the corporate Democratic Party, and plans to endorse Democrat candidates. This has rightly caused dissension within that movement. The challenge is for those of us who believe that capitalism must be replaced by a democratic socialism. We do not know the exact form of this socialism, but it must be truly democratic. But I believe this cannot happen without the working class united with the working class of communities of color. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that, Tom. Thank you for that analysis. And that's what we must work on constantly, continually. Sister Betty.
And Brother Tom, I just want to remind you that we wanted you to get in some good trouble. We recommended you to Sister Ann Lamb and her work on the tribunal that's coming up, the in the spirit of Mandela tribunal that's coming up in October. I will talk to you more about it or give you her contact information. And thank you for your presentation. We want to move right along. Brother Joel, your mic is open.
Yes, hello.
How are you, Joel? Yes, we hear you.
Yes, I want to talk about what's happening around the world, namely we're focusing, as we should, on political prisoners in our own, not our own country, but the country. I think Lenin had once said that the workers don't have a country. They have a country that they're trying to get. And but we all live to some degree in a world that's much more closely knit together, and in which a what's sometimes called a new world order is steadily emerging, in which the world is becoming a smaller and smaller place, but it still has a tremendous degree of contradictions between oppressed some countries which have at one time or another experienced a working class revolution and created states that to this day are the products of that working class revolution, where the capitalists and imperialists can not fully control their economies or siphon profits out of those countries or colonize them into what can be called slavery on a collective national scale. But, of course, it never stops trying. And just as none of us in this country are free, as long as the freedom fighters in this country are in prison, and everybody else is intimidated by the fact that so many are in prison, so many others have been assassinated, that we're virtually all at gunpoint, even though we have much larger numbers than the ruling class. Pretty much that analogy of the 99% versus the 1% that became popular as a result of the Occupy Wall Street phenomenon represents the situation in terms of who's calling the shots and in whose favor. And who's actually calling the shots is probably more like 1% of 1% of 1%. And it's no democracy at all. It's a tiny handful of people subtly enslaving, or more or less subtly, depending on the different circumstances, enslaving the whole rest of the population and trying to re-enslave parts of the world that have partly broken away and have set a counterexample of working class revolution in which the major capitalists were expropriated. Now what's going on today is a very dangerous phenomenon. Many people have hoped that we would have all sweetness and light under Biden, or at least that he would be the lesser of the evils compared to Trump, and that this difference would be a very great difference. And many still believe that it has been, and certain concessions have been made and announced. But at the same time, we have to look at certain things that are growing worse by the day and got worse suddenly as the Biden regime replaced the Trump regime. Although the two, we have to understand, if you know anything about wrestling, that these are like two tag teams. And when the strategy and rhetoric of one gets a little bit tired, they tag up their partner in the corner and switch around and pretend that things have become very different. But people should not be under the illusion. In certain ways, already the Biden administration is proving measurably worse than Trump, measurably worse. For example, on the confrontation with the two large superpowers, Russia and China, both of which had experienced and led and undergone socialist revolutions, there has been a tremendous military buildup, although little noted in the media. It's being done largely on the sneak. In the South China Sea and the Taiwan Straits and other waters surrounding China, there is a gigantic naval buildup. And some of the articles have mentioned the idea of equipping this naval buildup with hypersonic missiles. Now, those missiles are just now coming off the development pad, if we can believe what the media are saying. But a hypersonic missile is one that can travel at 5 times to 10 times the speed of sound. And the example given in the article by CNN on the naval buildup around China is that they can hit targets 1,000 miles inside China within 12 minutes of launching those missiles. And they can carry nuclear warheads 20 times the strength of those that hit Hiroshima and Nagasaki at the end of World War II. Now, at the same time as that front is being built up, another gigantic naval front is being built up led by, of all forces, the British Navy, along with the Latvian and Estonian and a number of other small countries' navies. And this is another gigantic build-up with very powerful missiles and nuclear warheads aboard. It's called the Show of Force. And it is a show of force because that's the only thing that the imperialists today have on their side. They say that this is in to contain Russian and Chinese aggression. Where is this Russian and Chinese aggression? How many countries have they invaded in their entire histories compared to the United States and the British partnership empire, which have attempted to colonize the entire world and are still attempting to do the same thing? Incidentally, for those who had any illusion that Brexit, because it was presented in populist terms, represented any working class interests expressing themselves in England, the Boris Johnson administration is putting those warships into the most provocative maneuver since World War II, right into the Baltic Sea, up against the Russian borders. Now, the Brexit was a break from the European Union. The European Union's largest trading partners are Russia and China. So they might have more difficulty doing some provocation like that if they were still part of the European Union. And apparently Brexit is going to put them on a into a shotgun wedding with U.S. imperialism. And these attacks are coordinated. The British could not also be doing this without U.S. greenlighting it and supporting it materially 100%. So this is what's going on in terms of the superpower confrontation. And there are also, according to CNN, massive military maneuvers by NATO that are being that are still classified and that are scheduled to take place soon again as a show of force against what they call Russian and Chinese aggression, which they failed to mention any specific examples of. But in China, they take up grievances in secessionist movements in Hong Kong, and to strengthen the defenses of Taiwan and promoting eventual declaration of an independence and permanent separation of Taiwan from China. And right now, we know that China is recognized as having ultimate sovereignty on both, but thanks to U.S. imperialism and its allies, they have been able to maintain what amounts to an outlaw regime on Taiwan, through which the gigantic capitalist bankers and other imperialist forces have been able to kidnap that part of China into their control and alliance. Also, on the front of other countries which may be the more immediate subject of aggression, another buildup has taken place where terrorist forces have infiltrated into Venezuela from Colombia, undoubtedly with Colombian government support under the sponsorship and goading of U.S. imperialism, and thousands of Venezuelans have been forced to flee, some of them into refugee camps in Colombia. Apparently, when they take over these areas, they don't allow Venezuelans to live there anymore. And a number of bombings have taken place inside that area, which are blamed on the Venezuelan government, but apparently orchestrated in support of the takeover, with the Venezuelans trying to push them back out. So there's already military aggression going on against Venezuela, and that could be a warm up. It's certainly escalating from the. But we'll remember that this began. That this took a gigantic step when Trump, the predecessor of the Democrats, brought Juan Guaido, an imposter who they say is the real president of Venezuela, into the State of the Union message. And if you watch the State of the Union message, you can see a gigantic standing ovation from both sides of the House and Nancy Pelosi in the front jumping up and down in enthusiasm for the invasion talk that was going on behind Guaido. So they're both in partnership. Also, the naval buildups that are going on today are largely based on increased military spending that took place during the Trump administration as a preparation for expansion later on, while he pretended to be such friends with, or at least a reducer of tension. The Democrats were more open about actually wanting to increase tensions between Russia and China, for example, in the 2016 debate, Hillary Clinton calling for a no-fly zone to possibly shoot down Russian planes over Syria. And Biden is making a great deal of noise right now about not pulling out of Syria, and they've just put in a new military installation in the part of Syria that contains oil in its northeast. So Biden also was instrumental in the coup in the Ukraine, which also placed U.S. allied political forces potentially armed with nuclear weapons right on the Russian border. He was directly in charge as appointed by the Obama administration.
You have given us a history lesson, which we're going to have to listen to the program over and over and over again on not so much past history, but current events, showing that the Democrats and the Republicans are much the same people. Thanks for that analysis, and for all of those who think that we're on a trip to heaven when you elected Biden, listen to Joel's presentation, and you'll know that is not so. Sister Betty.
I want to make it clear that the uprisings in the 60s not only addressed the oppression at home, it addressed oppression abroad. Malcolm X traveled all over Africa and what the Europeans call the Middle East, which is Africa. But this is what happens when you stand up against the evil empire. This is the most vicious, the most pervasive empire in the history of the world. And the brothers and the sisters who united to say, we will resist this war, we will resist the war at home, we will strike back, are in prison. And that is why we must free our political prisoners. If you've read the Panther pamphlets, if you've read the Panther newspapers, you know they were always against imperialism and colonialism. And we've got colonialism here, and they have colonialism over there, and the whole world united in that message. And so what Joel is telling us is that these people are out of control. The new order is here. And the only people who can save us are the people who have the heart, like our political prisoners, to stand up and fight back.
Sister Dolores Cox, your mic is open. Thanks for that, Joel. Thanks for that lesson. I will listen to it over and over again to get it all. But it teaches us as to what's happening, present, current, and future events. Dolores.
And this is why Mamiya is so important, because all over the world, his writings, his last three books, attack the empire. Go ahead, Sister Dolores. Thank you for being patient with us.
Hi. And I want to say thank you to all the previous speakers as well. On a lighter note, since this is the end of Women's History Month, I want to mention that a short time ago I discovered that there was such a thing as a women's hockey league, and that there were women hockey players, ice hockey players, and particularly that there were black women who played professionally in the women's hockey leagues. Briefly, I want to mention a brief history of ice hockey. Two decades ago, before the National Hockey League began and was established, there was a colored hockey league of the Maritimes organization, which was formed in 1895 in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, and it was comprised of the sons and grandsons of the escaped enslaved Africans from the United States. The Colored Hockey League was formed 25 years before the Negro Baseball League in the United States. The Colored Hockey League helped pioneer the sport of ice hockey. Many whites, however, believed that blacks couldn't endure the cold, that their ankles were weak, and that they lacked the intelligence to organize sports. Of course, the colored players proved them wrong. White team officials copied elements of the black style or sought to take credit for black history innovations. Getting back to the Women's Hockey League, in 2010, the first black woman was inducted into the National Hockey League Hall of Fame. She was a Canadian in Toronto, and she played professionally in the 1980s and the 1990s and experienced many insults and discrimination as a black woman. The first black woman to compete in the Women's National Hockey League was in 2015. And in 2019, she later became the National Hockey League's Defensive Player of the Year. She played in the United States and Switzerland. She now is the professional hockey scout for the Los Angeles Kings, pushing for diversity and inclusion of people of color. And all these women are so admirable and, you know, for their accomplishments. And we need to keep them in mind. The other thing, just real briefly, I want to mention the George Floyd trial that's on now. It's in its second day of testimony. And only one member of the Floyd family has been allowed to be in the court. And the jury composition is 3 black people, 7 whites, 2 mixed people who say they're mixed. And altogether, of the 12 jurors, there's 8 females and 4 males, plus 2 alternates. It seems to me that the only victory that we're going to get out of this, other than finding all the cops guilty, those 4 cops guilty of murder, is that we end qualified immunity of cops and that they're found guilty of all the charges. The prosecutors, special prosecutors, to me seem very qualified and competent. And getting feedback from the reporters, it seems that, you know, they have the same view of the prosecutors, that they have a good case that they presented. And today, the president of the NAACP, his name is Derek Johnson, he said what's on trial now is the right to breathe and also the right to justice. And I've noticed that the defense attorneys are blaming the victim. You know, they're saying that George Floyd caused his own death. And what they want us to not believe is our lying eyes. Okay, so we have to really pay attention. It's really hard to watch the trial and listen to the people who testified, particularly the 4 age children today. And the trauma in their voices and in how they're revealing what they witnessed. I mean, it's so hard to watch and listen to them. But it's important, you know, that we pay attention hope that, since the prosecutors have the burden of proof, you know, and the defense team, you know, is trying really, really hard to establish reasonable doubt, we've got a couple of more weeks here for the trial to really come to an end. So, you know, we should all keep an eye out on what's going on. But it really is truly hard to listen. But, we do have to pay attention.
Thank you so much, Dolores Cox. And an aside, can anyone doubt that this is terror? It is, you say, it is hard to listen to. It is impossible for me to listen to because I've already listened to it, and it is very clear what this is about. And on another note, Dolores, talking about hockey and women in hockey, my daughter was a super hockey player. My grandkids are going to make a name for themselves in college hockey and maybe even professional hockey, all up the game.
Get out of here. That's awesome. You know, there's the first black woman coach in the National College Hockey League. And she began her career in 2013 in Pennsylvania. So, you know, she's now currently a head hockey coach, first black woman. So that's good. So your daughter, the doctor, is into hockey. Good, good, good.
And aside, I remember Johnny Cray, the first black hockey official, on ice official in Pittsburgh. And so, yes, there's a lot of hidden history that we can get to. Sister Betty.
Before we leave, we want to open up the mic for Brother Dennis and see if he wanted to give us any closing words. Brother Dennis, your mic is open.
Yes. Hey, good evening, everybody. First of all, happy 27th birthday, Sister Betty. And thanks for friending me on Facebook. Thanks for friending me on Facebook. And there was a whole lot said. I had a lot to say, but I'm not going to say it tonight with regards to the trauma that we are all involved with fighting this demonic system. Sad to say that. I think, Brother Ralph, you said it best, that if we're not involved, if we're not blocking, if we're not standing up and standing proud, that we're as complicit as they call Derek Chauvin in court today, a sadist or a sadist. And that's one who gets his thrills, his sexual thrills, off of inflicting pain and things of that nature. But there was a lot I had to say, but I also want to give kudos to Belinda Parker Brown, who's doing a wonderful fight as well on behalf of Pastor Earl Victor, as well as Unanimous Is Not Enough. She did that. And then a $500 million lawsuit to free the slaves in Angola prison. You mentioned Angola tonight. I had some things. We'll talk about that another time. I know that we're out of time. I want to thank you all so much. And thank you for letting me come in. Thank you.
Thank you so much, all who contributed. We're sorry there were so many more who wanted to have something to say. We will look to hear from you next week because there is so much information that we do not have. And we're just trying to catch up. Thank you again. Love you all. Look forward to seeing and hearing from you and being educated by you next week. Good night, my brothers and sisters, my family. Good night, Sister Betty. Happy birthday. Say I'm clear. For the whole world to hear.
I wish I could share.